Nature, it turns out, is full of enemy agents, living behind enemy lines, doing their work. Parasites. They're literally parasites. Carl Zimmer has written a book about the different strategies that these parasites use to survive, and it makes for weirdly compelling reading. For one thing, who knew how prevalent they were?
Most creatures on Earth are living inside an enemy, and they are trying to fight that enemy, trying to survive, trying to outwit.
Just to give people a sense of the range of things that different parasites do, could you tell the story of the parasite that gets into ants, the lancet fluke?
Sure. Well, the lancet fluke is kind of a flatworm. It starts out as an egg on the ground, and a snail comes along and eats the egg, and it kind of irritates the snail's system. So eventually it kind of coughs it up. And so there you have this sort of clump of kind of snail goo with a parasite in it. And while it's disgusting to us, to an ant, there's nothing more delicious than snail goo. So the ant comes along and it eats the snail goo and the parasite along with it. So now you have these flukes inside the ant. And once they recognize that they're inside an ant, the ant, they start doing some strange things. Sort of as the sun is starting to go down, while the other ants are probably heading back to the nest, it gets this uncontrollable urge to climb upward. It wants to climb up. And what it generally does is it climbs up a blade of grass.
And what's the advantage to the parasite for the ant to be up there?
Well, it's not too obvious at first. I mean, you know, it's not like the parasite wants to take in a better view. The thing is that there are these grazing mammals, sheep, cows, and that's one of their favorite grazing times, towards the end of the day. So the ant goes up there, sheep comes along, chews on the grass, the ant gets eaten, chewed up, dies. But the flukes inside the ant, they can survive the digestive acids in the sheep's stomach. And actually, sheep are where they like to live. They're their final host.
What's so amazing about that is not just the control that the parasite is having over the ant. That life cycle that you're describing is so complicated. It's having to go through three different animals over the course of its normal life cycle.
Yeah, there are actually some parasites that go through six or seven different animals to get through their life cycle. It's mind-boggling.
It's really hard to talk about without kind of ascribing a kind of intentionality to them, you know, which they don't have consciousness. They don't have brains in any way. And yet it's hard for us to even understand what they're doing without kind of like putting that on them.
Yeah, because because in a sense they are using us or using other animals or their other hosts in such an intentional way. And they seem to know so much. How does a tapeworm inside a fish know that if it makes it flick and flail in a certain way that it'll be easier for a bird to see it so they can get inside that bird where it wants to be? It's amazing. And not only do they not have brains, a lot of them don't even have nerves. So it's just this sinister chemical wisdom they have.
And it seems like all the parasites break down into two different groups. There are the kinds that actually get inside a host and then kill it off in their drive to survive. And then there are others which actually just kind of live inside and are happily living inside forever. They want the host to survive. Could you just tell the example of the creature that eats the fish's tongue?
Yeah, this is a particularly creepy one. The parasite in question is called an isopod, which is a kind of crustacean. It looks like a little pill bug or something, but it lives in the water. And what it does is it swims into the mouth of a snapper, a fish. And when it's in there, it eats that fish's tongue. It just devours the tongue completely. But just the tongue. It stops there. But now this isopod, this parasite, does something very weird. It sort of turns around, so it's facing front, and kind of sort of sits, hunkers down exactly where the tongue used to be. So if you look in one of these fish's mouths, you see this tongue that has these little eyes on the end of it. It's amazing. And what scientists think then happens is that the fish can then sort of use the parasite as its tongue. And it'll go out and it'll catch some food, it'll catch a fish, and will crush up the food on the back of this parasite. The fish, I guess, doesn't mind too much if it can still get its meal, I guess. And the fish can then kind of get back to its life.
So many of these stories just are such gross-out stories on a visceral level.
Well, you know, it's funny because, you know, it disturbs us when we talk about that when it comes to parasites. But, I mean, why doesn't it disturb us when we talk about a lion? We name football teams after lions.
Yeah.
But we don't name, you know, football teams after tapeworms. You don't have the Chicago tapeworms or something like that. We don't want to think about it. But, you know, we admire these predators. But what are these predators doing? These predators are taking advantage of these other life forms. They're just sort of, you know, eating them from the outside, I guess you could say. But, I mean, to my mind, it's just a lot more cool when they're on the inside trying to figure out how to make this work.
Thinking about this as much as you have, do you start to see everything as being parasites?
I see a lot of things as being like parasites. Parasites are the most successful life form on Earth. And it could be as many as 3 parasites for every 1 free living species. It's hard to say.
Huh.
And if you're not a species that is living inside another thing, then you're a species with something living inside of you.
Is one side winning?
I'd say the parasites have the upper hand because they're just doing so very well.
The parasites have the upper hand.
Sure. Yeah, I mean, they have the most species. They're, you know, they're getting around all these defenses. I mean, there are things they do that we don't know how they do it, or if we know how they do it, we can't reproduce it. We just stand in awe of it.
I know, but we know about them. They don't know about us. Like, we're the ones with the brains and the thinking and the consciousness.
Well, then maybe you're overselling your brain, you know? I mean, your brain is a wonderful thing, but these parasites are able to pull the strings in those brains in a lot of cases. Say, for example, you know, a rat. You know, rats are very, very smart animals. I mean, they know how to learn. They know how to figure out their surroundings. But there's a parasite called Toxoplasma. It's a single-celled parasite, and they pick it up on the ground. And when it gets into them, they suddenly lose their fear of the smell of cats. Otherwise, they're totally the same. Then the cat eats them, and then Toxoplasma gets into its final host, which is the cat. Even though you got a brain, you're still being pushed towards your doom by this single-celled parasite.
Mr. Simmer, whose side are you on?
I think I'm on the parasite side when it comes to getting a bad rep. I'm their PR man.
Because, Mr. Zimmer, at some point we're all going to have to choose sides in this war. Speaking for the other humans, I want to say you're either with us or against us.
Well, you know, it's funny. I have not gotten seriously sick in my life, knock on wood. And I have actually gone to places where there are a lot of parasites around in order to report on how people are dealing with them. And I didn't get sick. I was really scared, but I didn't get sick. I didn't get malaria. I didn't get river blindness. I didn't get sleeping sickness.
Wait a second. Are you saying that's because they could sense that you are in league with them?
Who knows? Well, maybe they think I'm here to serve their purpose.
Carl Zimmer, his book, The Perfect Reading Material If You Ever Want to Have a Long Talk with an 8-Year-Old Boy, is Parasite Rex. Act 3, As the Worm Turns. Well, as long as we're on the subject of apologists for parasites, let's hear this story from the staff of Radiolab. Here's Radiolab host Robert Krowich and reporter Patrick Walters.
So, Pat, are you there?
Yeah, I'm here, Robert.
So tell us a little bit about this fellow. What's his name exactly?
His name is Jasper Lawrence. He actually grew up in England. He grew up in this little farm in the southwest corner of England. And it's important to know, I think, before hearing any part of his story, that Jasper has had allergies for pretty much his whole life.
On really bad days, my eyes would swell up so much from pollen or airborne allergens that they would feel like they were swelling shut. I could feel my eyes squeaking in my sockets. It was an enormously uncomfortable feeling.
But it was nothing debilitating.
They were just allergies.
So, you know, he's just like most other people who have allergies, just learn to deal with it.
You know, you live with it.
But
what changed for me in my late 20s, early 30s was my asthma. And at that time, I was living in Santa Cruz. I was relatively recently married. We had three cats that had been grandfathered in with the relationship. And I started a landscaping business. I really didn't want to work for someone else.
I think someone with allergies starting a landscaping business, that seems kind of unexpected.
Stupid is actually the word for it. And within 6 months or a year,
he starts to notice
this really weird barking cough.
Was there anything particular that brought this on?
No, it was just sitting and breathing.
Okay.
Cats certainly didn't help.
Right.
And during that period, my asthma got much worse very, very quickly. By the time it was 1996, 1997, I was seeing specialists, having skin allergen tests and cycling through emergency inhalers, trying Singulair and all these other drugs that were coming on the market. I was being hospitalized at least a couple of times a year. I mean, I looked terrible. I had dark eyes and pale, waxy skin. I had that allergic look. It was a really bad time.
And he decides in the summer of 2004 to take a vacation. You made this visit to England.
Yeah. I took my two daughters back to see my aunt who had raised me. Very early in the visit, I was sitting at her kitchen table, and she asked me if I'd seen a BBC documentary about parasites and their connection with things like asthma and allergies and multiple sclerosis. And of course I hadn't, but I went upstairs and got on the internet after lunch, and I stayed on the internet until perhaps 2 a.m. I didn't stop.
And he's reading and reading and
the work of all these researchers.
One study after the next.
In Japan, and epidemiological studies in Africa, animal models of multiple sclerosis. This enormous weight of evidence.
That in the developing world, people don't really have asthma or allergies. And what he discovers is that behind all of this, to his shock, is hookworms.
Hookworm?
Yeah, hookworms.
Yeah, I learned that asthma was 50% less likely in someone who had a hookworm infection.
So this sort of just, like, hits you.
Oh, yeah.
What did you think when you read that?
Oh, I immediately was determined to obtain hookworm. Immediately. I couldn't wait.
So hookworms are these very tiny worms the size of a little hair. But if you take a microscope and you zoom way in, they have this big circular mouth brimming full of pointy teeth. Very scary to look at. They have these toothy mouths so that they can burrow up through your feet, ride through your blood, and eventually end up down in your gut and start chewing on the inside of your intestines.
This guy wants hookworms in his intestines?
Absolutely. And so did you just Google it?
Yeah, hookworms for sale. I mean, you know, someone's got to be selling them.
But,
Nothing. I contacted every laboratory supply company in the world and parasitology research centers, and they all said the same thing. No. Various flavors of no. And so I came to the conclusion that I was going to have to go to the tropics.
So, fast forward a little. Jasper is in Cameroon along the coast.
Quite literally and figuratively, the armpit of Africa.
He's 200 miles north of the equator. It's extremely hot. He finds a guy to drive him around. And so he and his driver would go to a village.
He'd get out of the car.
Walk up to these villagers and ask them if they could see the latrine.
Just an open area of ground, usually with bushes so people can have a little bit of privacy. And I would go over to the area, remove my shoes, and start walking. The first time I did that, I almost couldn't do it. It must have been 110 degrees that day, 100% humidity. And the stench and the noise from the insects, it was so repulsive and so disgusting.
How many villages, latrines do you think you visited?
Between 30 and 40.
Jasper spent 2 weeks there walking around in village latrines, and then he flew home.
Yeah, I got back from Africa in early February. So I was looking at allergy season coming up. And the day I realized that I no longer had allergies, that was such a good day. I got into my car and I started driving, and I had the window down. You know, I felt the breeze blowing across my face. In the past, what that meant was that very quickly my eyes would be itching uncontrollably. Snot and phlegm was going to be pouring out of every orifice in my face. And it didn't happen. It didn't happen. I just started screaming in the car. I was so, so happy. And I haven't had an asthma attack since I went to Africa. I no longer have allergies. The vast majority of the benefit that I've experienced has come from hookworm.
What is the hookworm doing? Do you know?
Well, so the immune system that we learn about in elementary school is all about like these attack cells that go after foreign invaders and destroy them.
Right.
And that's a big, important part of the immune system. But if the immune system were allowed to attack and destroy things unchecked, it could kill you. And there are lots of diseases where the primary symptoms are caused by the immune system attacking the body that it's really designed to protect. Allergies and asthma are just two of these. Some of the more serious ones are like type 1 diabetes, multiple sclerosis, Crohn's disease, in which the immune system actually starts attacking the inside of the intestines.
Mm.
There are like 80 of these diseases.
80 of them.
And so what scientists have found in lots and lots of mouse studies, and in some human studies to this point too, is that once the hookworms get inside the gut and the immune system actually starts attacking somehow, hookworms actually stimulate these cells, which just quiet things down and tell the attack cells to stop attacking.
So these are like lullaby cells?
Exactly. What lots and lots of scientists think, Joel Weinstock,
Tufts Medical Center,
and dozens of others, is that over
thousands and thousands of years,
hookworms almost developed in tandem with the human immune system.
Coevolution. Parasites living within your body, your immune system changes.
And so you got to a point where the hookworms could survive safely.
The worm gets a home. There's food coming down the food pipe. And in return,
the human immune system gain some kind of
some form of
positive regulatory
advantage.
So that if you had this glitch where your immune system started attacking your own body, the presence of the hookworms would keep things
controlled. That's the gift. You do something for the worm does something for you.
So then, by that logic, what we in the West, in the richer countries, have done stupidly is we have cleaned ourselves up too much and we don't have enough wormies in us.
Yeah, this is called...
They call it the hygiene hypothesis.
The hygiene hypothesis. That we're not dirty enough.
Too clean.
We function like rainforests. We're ecosystems. And we've entirely eliminated a class of organism that co-evolved with us and our genetic predecessors for millions of years.
Now, I don't want to leave the impression that hygiene is bad for you. People can't go back to living in filth, kids playing in sewage by the riverbank. But in improving our hygiene, we are also excluding organisms that may be important for making us well.
So then what does Jasper do about all this?
He decides to start a business selling hookworm to people.
What?
You can call him up and he will literally FedEx a dose of hookworms to your door.
How?
Sorry to break in for a second. Pat.
Hi, Jad.
Where does he get the hookworm from?
This is weird. Jasper gets the hookworm from himself.
Could you describe how you go about getting hookworm from your stool into one of your patients?
Well, it's a very easy organism to work with. It just gets up and it walks out of it. So it doesn't take an enormous amount of work to separate it from the feces. And then having done that, I repeatedly wash them in solutions of antibiotics to make sure that anything that could live on them is killed. People contact us, we'll have them complete a questionnaire, submit a recent blood test, then we'll ship them a dose and all the materials and equipment and the instructions necessary to infect themselves.
Is this a safe thing to do?
Jasper has done tons and tons of research, but he's not a doctor.
Right.
The treatment is not approved by the FDA.
I wonder, is there any serious sort of double-blind study trying to figure out whether some safe delivery of hookworm might make sense?
Yeah, so one of the guys who was sort of a pioneer in this hookworm research is David Pritchard.
I'm Professor David Pritchard.
Immunologist and parasitologist.
At the University of Nottingham, where I study parasites and the wound-healing properties of maggots. So we've now got two safety trials under our belts, but we've yet to conduct the trials to show the therapeutic benefit results from infection with worms.
So Pritchard infected himself pretty much just to make sure that it was safe.
What we did was 10 of us in the lab took worms at different doses. We were either given 10, 25, 50 or 100 worms, and then we had to report on the symptoms. And on the back of that study, we determined that 10 worms were tolerated.
But Pritchard, when he did this proof of safety study, actually gave himself 50 hookworms.
Oh.
Which put him out of commission for a while.
Well, I felt pretty bad. I mean, pain in the gut, really. You know, you could feel them because they are biting on your tissues.
I mean, if you have too many hookworms, they can cause things like diarrhea. And the most serious side effect and the side effect that makes them sort of a public health enemy is that they can give you anemia.
So if you have too many, you lose quite a bit of blood to these parasites?
Well, you know, if you take too many hookworm, which you're not going to if you come to us, the worst thing you're going to get is anemia, but it's not like you wake up one morning and you're drained of blood. Very slow to develop, and it's very easy to deal with.
Jasper's kind of just gone for it. You know, it's a very sort of like cowboy move.
To the scientific community, I think they believe that I'm premature.
It's not FDA approved.
In offering this to the public.
You don't know what it is. You don't know its purity. It's not safe.
But I've talked to several clients who had really severe allergies and asthma. They say they've just achieved these great results. And Jasper also says he's seen success with a few multiple sclerosis patients and several Crohn's disease patients, too.
Like, how many people do you think that you have infected?
It's about 85 right now.
How is business? Business is
adequate, but I honestly don't know why I don't wake up in the morning with my front garden 20 deep with people with ulcerative colitis, Crohn's disease, allergies. I just don't know why I'm not completely buried.
The way he sees it, people are scared.
Well, they're the people who are coming from a point of view of what they learned in kindergarten about clean drinking water and sewers. To them, worms and parasites are so repulsive that there's nothing good to be said about them. But I can make you better. It's simple, it's cheap. I mean, for God's sake, these organisms fall out my rear end every day, 500,000 at a time. The raw material is human excrement, for God's sake. All people have to do is open their minds. Are you really that scared of a little worm?
Thanks to Patrick Walters and the hosts of Radiolab, Jad Abumrad and Robert Krulwich for that story. After that story was first broadcast, the Food and Drug Administration decided to pay a visit to Jasper Lawrence's house in Santa Cruz. Officials inspected the lab where he harvests his hookworms, told him he had to shut down his operation. That night, Jasper and his wife packed up their belongings and fled the country so that he could keep harvesting and selling hookworms. Jasper's website is autoimmunetherapies.com, and before you get any big ideas about ordering some hookworms, he is not shipping worms right now to the United States of America.